That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first, live from the Screwball Whiskey Studios. Hey, guys. How you living? You doing well? Good. Glad to hear that. So in this episode, my buddy Richard stopped by, and he wanted to interview me. And after a very, very, very long time of talking to brother Richard about doing this, he stopped by, and we finally got around to it. So to give you a little background information, I met Richard a little over a year ago. He's a podcast listener like me, and in the beginning stages of the podcast, of my podcast, he was very interested in it from the ground level, and he's always wanted to interview me, so I gave him the opportunity to do that, and he tells you a bit about himself, so I'm not going to take any of that away from the content for time reasons, but anywho, please go to the MIStuffPodcast.com, MIStuffPodcast.com, or KelseyHudgens.com. They'll take you to the same place. On the front page, there's links to all the social media for the podcast. And on the blog page, there are social media links to my personal social media pages. And also on the music about section, there are links to where to download the new singles. Artwork done by Tyler Brown, who is actually hanging outside my door right now waiting on me to get done with this so that I can let him in and we can do some photo shooting somewhere around here. But him and brother Noah Byrne are here. So go to Brackfoot.com and support the Brackfoot movement. Brackfoot is real. Also, please go to screwballwhiskey.com, S-K-R-E-W, ballwhiskey.com. Hashtag get screwed. Tomorrow's stories begin right here. Screwball Whiskey, our fantastic sponsors, and they have finally made it to the great state of South Carolina bars. So congratulations to you guys, and we did it. We did that. I want to feel like I played a part in that. Damn it. So I'm going to feel that way. But anyway, please do that. Go to all the pages. Download the singles on iTunes, It Ain't Mine and Ballad of the Unlucky Man. Both are part of the same story in the same universe. So download those songs. And please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get up to 1,000 subscribers, but 420 is my next goal, and I am like just under 100 away. So please help me get to 420 subscribers. That's my next little threshold that I want to get to. So I want to try to do that anyway. Please share the page so that we can get there. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave reviews on Apple Podcasts as well, because that I get more analytics whenever you guys leave reviews, and I'd really like some little more information. So if you guys could leave reviews, that would push me up the Apple ladder and make me more easily accessible to people who wouldn't normally hear me. So please do that for me if you don't mind. Just leave a few reviews or some stars. I don't care. Leave thumbs down. I don't give a shit. If you don't like it, I want to know. I don't give a fuck. But. Just do something. Just anything. Just review. Just give me any kind of input. So anyway, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, episode number 155 of the MI Stuff Podcast, where I get interviewed by Brother Richard Squires. So yeah, without further ado, here's that. Enjoy, motherfucker. Yeah, audio folks. We were just talking about you, and you're going to have to go to the YouTube video and find out what we said. Go to YouTube.com, ladies and gentlemen, and type in MI Stuff Podcast by Kelsey Hudgens. I've just said that in the intro, so I don't know why I'm saying it again, but it doesn't matter. Does it, Richard?
Not at all, man. And yeah, Liz, I did growl. I growl a lot. It's like purring. Let's out. Any type of anxiety or fear just gives you that sense of peace. It's a nice way to live. People make fun of me at work all the time. My fiance makes fun of me.
I was just about to ask. Does Kelly call it the purr, or did you come up with that before?
No, she calls it the growl. My kids call it the growl, but I have to explain to people, especially at work, because I do it all the time. And for the longest time, you know, I work in Columbia. I'm a nurse in the ER. They think that I'm pissed off all the time, and I never am. Like, I'm the happiest nurse there, and that's why. Who's that? Pyramid 7, what?
What up, 7th Kevin? What?
All right, Liz, sit down.
But yeah, I... We've been talking about this for over a year.
Over a year. Yep.
I think for we went to Carrabba's for lunch one day and talked about doing this to the extent to where I was overwhelmed. You had a notebook, and I was like, "What?"
No, oh, dude, I was ready.
Because you said that you wanted to interview me.
Yeah.
And that was interesting.
Well, let me tell you why, man. So,
okay.
I say I grew up here. I didn't grow up in Myrtle Beach, Merle's Inlet. I grew up in Ainer, the glorious independent republic of Ainer. And we're famous for our rednecks. And by the way, rednecks are the greatest people in the world. I got one sitting with me right here.
I'm a redneck.
Yep, absolutely. We take care of each other.
Yep.
It's just a good way to live. And if you find that offensive, from my perspective, we're not going to go back on the history of it all with the whole Presbyterian Reformed theology thing. But redneck doesn't mean what you think it means. And from our perspective, it's just a community that takes care of each other. Yeah, we might be a little skeptical about people from the outside, but we take care of each other. And once you come into our little group, you're one of us.
Yeah.
And I recognized that early on. Like I said, growing up here, I've seen a bunch of bands, and there's never been a musician or a musical group. And a bunch of kids from Ainer that I grew up with were musicians, and they're really great musicians. But there's never been anybody that I intentionally would go out to see until I heard these guys. And it was just a total accident. I just stumbled upon them, and I was like, holy shit. I mean, you know, they're playing just basic classic rock the first time I saw them. It was Cornbread. It was you, Smitty, and Adam, I believe. Yep. And I was like, oh my God, you know, these guys.
At Creek Ranch, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
My parents were there.
Yep, yep. And that was the first time I ever requested what I always request, that hymn. And Kelsey played the Old Rugged Cross, and I walked up to his dad, and I was like, you raised a good boy. So every time I come into town, I work in Columbia, like I said, you know, and every time I come into town to be with my fiance or be with my kids, like, I always text Kelsey or Smitty and is like, are you guys playing? You know, and I always try to see them because it's just, it just makes you feel good.
That's a good compliment, man. I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. It does.
I also appreciate you stopping by while you're at the movies, Brother Kevin. Appreciate that.
Pay attention, Kevin. We got good stuff coming, man. You know, and that's what art, in my opinion, is all about, is making other people experience emotion. And these guys do it. I haven't seen, what is it, the American Sound?
Yeah.
Haven't seen you guys yet. Look forward to that.
But it's fun.
I've seen Kelsey on his own. I've seen Cornbread, and it's just been incredible. So when we met over a year ago, I just sat down. I said, you know what? I'd like to just sit down and interview you because you got stuff under the surface there that people don't know about, and they should. So that's why I'm here.
All right, man. Well, I'm all open to this, man. You asked beforehand if there was anything that was off limits, and I can't think of there being anything that would be off limits to the point to where I don't think that I feel like I've already brought up a lot of things, you know, that are very close to off limits for a lot of people. So I think my idea of off limits, like, there's nothing that we could talk about that I probably haven't already brought up, at least in part.
So why do you think people have that stuff that's off limits? Like, we can't talk about that.
Because they don't want to relive. Because they haven't figured out how to properly store that memory yet. Because they haven't figured out how to think, okay, I can still have this thing be a part of me without it defining who I am, or still defining who you am, who you are, but like in a different way. You know, they haven't properly figured out how to store or unpack that memory.
Unpack. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's roll back a little bit. Background. Where are you from?
Bennettsville, South Carolina.
What was your first vehicle?
My first vehicle was a 1989 GMC Jimmy that I actually drove with my license. Other than that, I had a few other cars like before, but those were just like my dad bought this 69 Galaxy that we were going to fix up, and we never did that. And it was just too much. But what's going on? What's up in Little Rock? How you living? Appreciate you. Liz is like, Richard, you have no clue.
Oh, dude. We're talking about right in the ear.
No, she's just talking about the stuff that we talk about on live.
Yeah.
Like, stuff that we talk about, the information and stuff.
We'll see.
Yeah, open book, 100%. But yeah, that's a 1989 GMC Jimmy. My stepdad's brother, Uncle Thomas, RIP Uncle Thomas, painted it jet black for me, and I put some bullet hole rims on it. And the interior was shit brown. It was an S15 for those familiar with what those were before the S10 came out.
Remember the S10 Hurricane?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
My God.
The Chevy S10 is probably the most durably made vehicle of all time.
Dude, you got hundreds of painters here in Myrtle Beach to attest to that who are still driving like 1984 S10. So, yep, you're right on that.
Thank God for AC.
Yeah. So, all right. So your first vehicle was a Jimmy. And for those of you who don't know, you know, that's the same as a Chevy Blazer.
Yep.
How long did you have that car?
I had that car until probably a year or so until I found a 1995 GMC Jimmy that was blood red, two door sport, and it was just the same vehicle that I had, but like 6 years newer. And I bought that. It was a new round body style. And the round body style back then, you could get like a 95, and it looked the same as like the new cars. Like it looked the same as like the 01 or 02 at the time. And I was like, okay, so now everybody's going to think I got a new car, you know, because it looks the body style is the same. Like back then, they would get a body style and not change it for a decade, you know. Like the 1994 Chevy S10 looks the same as the 2003 Chevy S10, basically.
So growing up in Bennettsville, like it's bigger than Ainar, but kind of the same culture.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, no offense, but you and I have the same little thing, like, we're not exactly mainstream small town people.
Mm-mm.
So what was that like for you? Now I'll tie it in, like baseball. Did you play sports?
Yeah, but I was awful. I didn't get it then.
Yeah.
I didn't understand.
Yeah. I was a wrestler. I was awful. At practice, I would beat the guys that would go to the matches and win. I'd go to a match and I'd get nervous and lose. So I totally understand that. So you played. So did that kind of help out a little bit with, okay, Kelsey's cool. You know, he's a jock or
no, I was not that at all. I was, I do need a big car. I am a giant. not at all. I was never that person. I was always the funny guy. I was always the one that was trying to make everybody laugh. When I was a kid, like I would just try to. That was always my thing. I would try to make people laugh. And back home, the way to make people laugh is like to pick on people, like to make fun of something, you know, like poke fun at. Like that's what my family does.
Right.
Like that's what our thing is we just laugh about stuff. Like I mean, I was thinking last night, like there was somebody at Liberty at Broadway, and this guy who was sort of a bigger guy stood up, but he picked the chair up with him, like physically picked the chair up with him when he stood up. And I was like, man, I remember the first time that happened to somebody at our house. Like, somebody just got too fat to where they stood up, like, because we're all big people, man. And where they stood up in the chair, like, got up with them, you know? And I mean, just like making fun of your family for something like that happening is that's what we did. And it was that was the thing when I was a kid. But after that, my dad wanted me to play baseball. Obviously, your dad wants you to be the sports, the kid that's into sports.
But right, right.
I did baseball from like T-ball up to Dixie Youth, and then I never played again. But I just wasn't any good, man. I just wasn't good. I'm like 0 for my career. I might have made it to first twice ever. I mean, I was scared of the ball. I was just a little bitch. I was a little pussy, man.
Hey, man. Totally relate.
But, yeah. But then a little bit after that was when I realized that, you know, playing that I could make music. You know, I could make sounds with these things. And like, I always had a piano at the house. You know, my granddad's greatest piano player that ever lived, and
that's a big statement, man.
But dude, I'm not just saying it because he was my granddad. Like he was legit, dude.
I mean, we were talking about like Cannonball Adderley,
dude. No, we're talking about like he doesn't need to know the song.
Shit, nice.
He doesn't need, like, dude, anybody can play a beautiful sheet music or a beautiful piece of music that somebody else wrote, but it takes a fucking wizard to sit down and play with, no matter, it doesn't matter what you did.
And this is Bennettsville.
Yeah, yeah.
God knows.
Yeah, he was the piano player for the Jim Nesbitt show back in the 70s.
Get the fuck out of here.
Nah, yeah, he was the piano player for the Jim Nesbitt show back in the 70s. Like, he had, like, Roy Rogers and Roy Acuff and Ernest Tubb and, not Roy Rogers, Roger Miller come through. Like, my granddad played with all of those guys. Like, Jim Nesbitt specifically, like, the guy who wrote Running Bear and Tiger by the Tail. I think he wrote Tiger by the Tail. That might not have been. I know he wrote Running Bear. But yeah, like, just pretty successful country songwriter from back in the day. My granddad was the piano house, like the band leader for his TV show.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like,
there's a picture of him up on the wall right there. You can't see it from where you're at, but it's stuck.
That's crazy. Like, you said Ernest Tubb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, I mean, maybe you guys know, but there's this whole, May the Circle Be Unbroken. It's basically like the greatest bluegrass players of all time.
Yeah.
Ernest Tubb's one of them.
Ernest Tubb's solid.
Dude, he's amazing.
All of those guys, you know, all of those guys would try to convince my granddad to, like, go on the road with him and join their traveling band and stuff like that into his... I absolute respectable honor. He said, no, I have a family. I have, you know, I have a business. He owned a heating and air business that my dad runs today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like he was just, he was like, you know, I'm not about that. He says, I'll go drive to Florence every morning to film the show. You know, but I'm going back home so that I can go to work. And, you know, that was just my granddad. You know, those Depression era guys.
Yeah, yep.
That just don't give up.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, people, I feel like people today don't understand that. And it reminds me of a podcast I listened to. Tim Ferriss interviewed Kevin Costner. And it talked about, at one point he was... excuse me, like talking about his dad and like this special moment that they had or whatever, you know, and his dad was worried that he had discouraged him.
Yeah.
You know, in his career or whatever. And he makes this statement, you know, we just came out of that fucking dust bowl. And it's just that if you got a job, you didn't want to lose it.
Yeah.
You know, but that mentality, there's something solid. There's just something about a guy that's willing to put on a flannel shirt and a pair of Dickies every day.
Yeah.
And go put in that time and just do his fucking work and come home and be glad that he has a family to come home to and that he is providing for them And he's grateful for the opportunity to do that, you know, just casting aside any glory that he may have. Unbelievable. You know, and that's one of the things that
even when he got old, when he couldn't work anymore, he would go out on the front porch and sit in a rocking chair and count the cars as they drove by. And he'd come in for an hour at lunchtime and go sit back out there for the rest of the day and count cars as they drove by because he couldn't deal with not doing something.
Something, yeah. Dude, yeah. That's my mom. My mom's 84. She'll be 85 in August. She had polio as a kid. She can outwork any six men I know. And it's just that. Like, she'll go out today and just hoe, you know, around the flower bed until she starts to shake. Then she'll go inside and just cool off, you know.
That's a lot different from when a lot of other people's grandmas go out hoeing.
Exactly. Not that I know any of them, by the way.
That's right, Liz. 1,000%.
Absolutely.
Real man.
So... All right, so Bennettsville, and we're going to skip some time. Well, no.
That's fine.
No, we're not going to skip some time.
Well, no, that well yeah, because shit, we're right there.
All right, Bennettsville, music.
Yeah.
Was your dad a musician as well?
Yeah.
What instrument? Or
He knows his way around all of them, but I mean, like, he can...
As far as a virtuoso, like your granddad was obviously a virtuoso.
Yeah, my dad, he wasn't as interested in. I don't know that he was as interested in like just trying to get past the point of just being able to play.
Okay, I got you.
You know, and I mean, my dad sings very well. He's got a great voice. My dad, that's what my dad does. He's part of like a quartet. He was in a gospel quartet for a while. And
baritone, bass.
He's more of a tenor.
Tenor, okay.
A lot of my voice is from him. Like my mom had a great voice too. We don't really talk about her much, but yeah, she had like a great natural voice. Like it was like Tom Cruise in Days of Thunder. It's like I can drive this thing, but I don't really know what I'm doing. But my dad, most of my addiction and stuff, like, I've gotten from my dad, like, just stuff like that. Now, he's a great singer.
And the last time I listened to you, it was just you. It wasn't Cornbread. Yeah. At the Monk over there at Barefoot Landing, like, you sang that song that was for your dad.
Yeah.
Dude, that was fucking awesome.
My King's Wisdom.
That almost broke me. That was great.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote it.
Like, well, okay, so is that how you always feel about your dad? Or was that just a moment of reflection and who my dad is to me and what he's done for me?
That song was, I don't go home a lot. I don't spend a lot of time with my family. I don't see them a lot. And that's not, it's nothing, and this is probably a good time to explain this period. I don't really go home a lot, and I don't really spend a lot of time with anybody in my family. And I know that that probably sounds like something awful from a lot of other people, but my family knows me. They know how I am. You know, they know that I am... I've always been that way. You know, like, I've always been sort of like... not really trying to go out of my way to do anything. Like, if you come to where I am... then that's pretty much how stuff always worked back in the day. Like I lived with my grandparents, you know, like after my mom and my mom left me and my dad when I was 2 years old, and like I was just always at my grandmother. I was always at my grandparents' house, so that's the only place I was really comfortable. So my dad, you know, after trying to get me to stay with him for years, just like finally just let me just stay with my grandparents. And everybody was there all the time.
Yeah.
Everybody was there all the time. So I never had to go anywhere. I always just had to stay home because everybody came there.
How far apart, like physically, how far apart was the rest of your family? Like where was the house you grew up, your dad's house?
Yeah.
Versus your grandparents' house? Like,
Just a couple of miles.
Yeah, okay.
Just a couple of miles. I got you. I am an introvert, 1,000%. But yeah, just a couple miles. But like, today, I don't really go back home a whole lot. Like, mm-hmm. I'll try to go on holidays and whatnot. And, my brother and sister-in-law came, and my nephew came to see me a couple of weeks ago, the right before I did the episode with Smitty. They had just left. And, like, that was nice, but I just am not really much for, like, I understand that I'm different from them, but it's I don't need physical interaction mm-hmm. to be fulfilled in like to know that I don't have to go and see them all the time to know that they love me and that I love them is what I'm trying to get at. And when I wrote that song, it was sort of like, I bet my dad probably, just because I'm this way and I don't really go home a whole lot no more, I bet my dad's probably like, this youngin's done lived down there and he's done got in his head and done figured out the keys of life and he don't believe in all this nonsense Bible and religion stuff anymore. He's not the same. He's not that boy that I knew anymore. And I wanted my dad to know that I still have that, you know, and that, like, I look at him like that, and I look at him like the king who shares the wisdom, who has these great stories that I remember from when I was a kid. And now when I'm trying to explain somebody else how to do something, when I explain to somebody else how to do something, and I'm hearing, like, my dad's, like, and there's a line in there, I'm hearing their same words falling out my mouth.
Yeah.
And, like, now I'm, like, hearing my dad in my way of explaining things to other people, so.
You and your dad get along when you're younger?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How old was your dad when you were born?
More or less. 28.
I mean. Oh, okay. All right. Cool. 28? So he was a kid.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's cool. Because I was just thinking, like, it's funny because my dad was 55 when I was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we did not get along. And we are just alike. I mean, it's scary. We are both the youngest of the siblings, spoiled brats.
Yeah.
We're just alike. But I say things now and I think back to my dad, and it's like, motherfucker.
Right.
Something that come out of his mouth.
Well, no, that's the way I am, man. And I'm just like, I don't know. My dad has this way of not telling you what you should do, but telling you how he does things in hopes to convince you to try that his way. And I do that, but I think I'm a little bit more aggressive about it than he is, and people take that the wrong way.
I can see that.
When I'm, like, not trying to tell you what to do, I'm just trying to let you know that I see how you're doing it, and I know an easier, better way.
Yeah.
And people think that makes me come across as an asshole or whatever, however you want to put it. But I am very spiritual. But I think that makes me come across as like, oh, so you're better than me, you know? Oh, so you know this, so you think you know more than me or anything. And I'm not trying to say that, but you know what? There's a few subjects in which I guarantee you that I'm the only... There's a few subjects in which I am the top dog as far as information on it.
Baseball and music.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's a few things that, like, well, people don't know. And I'll say this, and I love them to death, and we've had this conversation before, and I'm like, dude, just like, when I'll be talking to Smitty about something on the drum, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I'll say something, and I'm like, and I'll figure it out in the recent past, to where I've learned how to, like, say things to where it doesn't sound condescending in a way. Where I'm just like saying, hey man, like, I know that you don't know the hours, literally the weeks, and I'm talking about in collective. Like, I've probably spent weeks and months of actual real time playing the instrument that you're playing. And I know you weren't there for when I was doing that stuff, but I was, and I'm just trying to share with you the things that it took me all of those. I'm trying to give you cheat codes on certain things, you know, and I understand that that's probably just not the way to do things. And I've learned to pick my battles now with things that I say, you know, and just like trying to, I don't want to come across as somebody who's trying to make the entire world more like me.
Right.
Which is not my goal at all. My one of my main things that I preach all the time is individualism. Be yourself as hard as you can be. But in also being yourself, if somebody comes along and says, hey, man, like, I've done this thing that you do for a really, 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 really long time, and I can help you with this thing, then I think to deny that is foolish. And I'm not when I say that, I'm not talking about the drum thing anymore. I'm just talking about in general,
in life. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the, like, bring it back to me, you know, as far as nursing, like if you think you know everything, you're fucked.
Right.
And it's, I feel like that's the same in every, I don't necessarily want to say profession, but just in life, you know, if you feel like you got it figured out, you're probably screwed. So, yeah, Smitty, not aimed at you at all, man. Absolutely love listening to you. Speaking of Smitty, and we'll circle back around, because I have something in mind for you. But speaking of Smitty, I think it fell. But
oh, is that what fell?
I think so. The Hank print, or the Hank, is that a print, or is that one of the actual paintings?
The actual painting.
Man. Oh, my God.
Smitty, actual painting. He's killing
this
it, man.
Is my favorite. Like, I thought the Robert Johnson... those of you who don't know, is it J. Paul Art?
J. Paul Smith dot art.
J. Paul Smith dot art. Homeboy has got his shit together.
Yep.
When I first saw that Smitty was going after graphic art, okay, I don't know, whatever, maybe. Smitty, bro, damn good job. The Robert Johnson and this Hank painting that we have right here.
Yep.
Unfucking believable. I love the Hank painting's my favorite right now. It is so good. Like, you see everything. You see his songs in that painting.
Yeah.
That's a great painting. So just a little caveat there. Sorry, didn't mean to get off course.
Yeah. Nah, he's good. And we had a conversation about that. Like, I was telling him, I was like, you know, our band relationship has gone from around a 1 to about a 10 lately, just because we've both got our things that we both have out. And I was like, tell him, I was like, I'm so glad you're doing this now, because now we're not defining or dwindling our creativity down to just cornbread now.
Right.
You know, when that only comes from one place, it'll get stale, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you know, some of the trees have to drop and grow other trees, you know, like that. Just that's how the shit has to work.
Yeah. It's a striving thing. If
right.
you're striving, you're missing it. When
right.
When you fall naturally into this is who I am.
Yes.
Then, you know, that's who you are.
Jason Isbell, are you living the life you chose, or are you living the life that chose you?
That was great, dude. I loved that. Played that at the Monk last time I saw you. Loved it.
God, man, Jason Isbell's a wizard.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, I never heard of the guy until you said, Google.
Yeah.
You know, we live in the most amazing time ever,
hands down.
There is a lot of shit that has just messed up, but basically we create that.
Yeah.
If you just stop and shut your mouth and stop worrying about other people and just pay attention to the people you love and the opportunities we have, we really are living in the most amazing time ever.
We are. 1,000%.
To think that I could sit there and listen to you play a song by someone, I don't know, fucking Jason Isbell, and I'm like, damn, that is amazing. Those lyrics are incredible.
Yeah.
And I could pick up a phone, you know, this little slab of electronics in my pocket, and Google, and then read this guy's lyrics and see the stuff that he's produced. And that is just some random dude here that I had met a year ago can introduce me to that. And then to take it to that level, That is amazing.
We're kids who were taught how to use the Dewey Decimal System, and then we're gifted the internet.
My kids don't even know what the Dewey Decimal System is.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what they're using? And we, because we use the internet like that. We use the internet like we used to use the library, you know, in most cases. And that's how I use it anyway. And like now, I've just recently gotten into the whole like blasting the social media aspect. Like, I've just recently gotten into that over like literally the last couple of years. Like, I used to just shit post all the time. Like, I used to just like just random stuff. Like, here's songs I'm listening to or trying to post this and that, and just being just stupid. But like, I've realized that this is the world's largest light pole that we can post as many flyers on that we want. And that's what I've been using it for lately. Like, I've been just growing the podcast and growing like the music listenership with these two singles I released last week, man. Just like,
which are
all through social media. I've literally just done all of that through social media. I wouldn't have been able to do this otherwise. Like, you release, like, you do a CD and then, you know, you get them at the shows or whatever, but that's not convenient for everybody. This is like, there's no reason why, if somebody already has Spotify and they want to hear my music, there's no reason why they can't right now.
So, but how's the response to that been? Because, like, here's my question. Like, I feel like what Smitty's putting out and what you're putting out, like, that matters.
Yeah.
You know, but if I'm a hot chick or I'm a good-looking guy, you get millions of followers just because you're hot.
Yeah.
There's tons. It doesn't matter. So how do you feel about that whole, just the frustration with there's just so much bullshit?
I don't mind it. I don't care. It's that's the thing that gets me, is that I feel like I can say all I want to say about this shit country music that people are releasing these days.
Click track.
But if it makes people feel good, isn't that the point? Isn't that the object? And, you know, I'll see like these chicks that post all this shit on Instagram or whatever. And I don't care, because, you know, some of these people are like struggling in their lives and need that positivity that they're going to gain from that. And then some people will read all of these quote unquote thirsty comments or whatever as like positivity and stuff like that. And some people need that in their lives. And I don't personally, but somebody else does. I understand that I am different from everybody else. I understand that I'm different from everybody else in the world, and that everybody else in the world is different from everybody else. I mean, just, I don't mind it. I don't care if they want to use social media in that way, because I don't want them trying to restrict the way that I use it in my way. So, you know, I just think that trying to tell some or trying to come down on people and make people feel like they shouldn't post this thing just because they're good looking or whatever, or if they're proud of something, like, I'm proud of the music that I release.
Right.
If I was as proud of the way that I looked, I'm sure I'd post that a lot.
That's a good perspective, man.
You know,
I hadn't thought of, I don't know, it just kind of frustrates me sometimes. Like, just seems shallow. It's like,
You have children, and you don't want to think that one day this will be the way that my child tries to receive that. And I don't have that.
Right.
So I don't think of it from a perspective, because I think, and I've noticed that from talking to a lot of, like, 90% of my people have, 90% of my friends have kids, and I've noticed that after they have a child, they're no longer thinking with the clean slate thought. They're thinking my child and then everything else.
Yeah, you're right.
So you run everything, right. every thought through that filter first. Yeah. And then you do it for so long, after the first couple of months of being a parent, you don't even think about it anymore. And you just automatically have every thought as to, like, this person is my child. Every single person that you see, you're plugging your child into that situation. And most people don't notice that.
That's crazy. I honestly have not thought about that, and you're exactly right.
Yeah. A lot of people don't even notice it. They do it.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think that just me not having that, I can actually think from the individual's viewpoint rather than, you know. And, of course, I'll see the sort of thing sometimes where I'm like, you know, your brother must be, he's like, your brother must hate everybody. Just because he's like, dude, I'm trying to, like, how many asses I'm going to have to whoop now because my sister's out here posting this shit. But because I have baby sisters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by the way, for having baby sisters and having stepsisters has ousted an entire genre of porn that I will never be able to appreciate properly. Which is apparently what everybody else likes now. Shit. But seriously, though, but I just feel like, you know, we think of things from the perspective of that which we can relate to personally.
You're right.
And the thing that's closest to your heart, you know, the thing that's like, you know, when I'm thinking now that I have a niece or a nephew.
Right.
Now that I have a niece and a nephew, that I'm like thinking of how the world's going to affect them. And that's when I'm like being more considerate about trying to recycle and trying to leave a better world than I, you know, found and stuff like that. But as far as the social media stuff, I don't care how people use it, because I think that the restricting of anybody, and it's going on a lot, and my listeners know that I'm not right or left wing, but it's going on a lot on social media where certain sides of opinions are being silenced. And what's up, Abby? But yeah, just like a lot of people are just like, you know, being ousted on social media from giving their opinions when another group's opinions are freely accepted and things like that. And I just think that to start, and even with the whole Alex Jones thing, to start to do that is so bad for all of us, because the internet is the Wild West, man. Liz calls Twitter the Wild West. Like, that's what this is. Like, everything is, we got
a president that can't get off his phone. Dude, they wouldn't have let every other president, they pretty much confiscated their phone.
Yeah.
So
I don't even care about that. I don't even care about that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it is the Wild West.
Oh, yeah. It's the Wild West. I mean,
and you got a cowboy and nothing. Right. It honestly doesn't change anything. Everybody not wigging out about Trump. No. The people here, you vote with your money, you vote with what you do with your lives. So get off that whole hating thing or loving thing or he's the same. No, just stop it, you know. But yeah, the internet, we're still trying to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And people like Kelsey, and I'm throwing right in there with Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, you know, all those guys. They're figuring it out. You know, and it is a new frontier. Like, this is...
They're much better at figuring it out than I am.
maybe not, man. Just because they're monetized, that doesn't necessarily mean they're better at figuring it out. You know, it's just the point that it's a new frontier. I mean, this is back in the day when we were pushing back, you know, west into our country, and you didn't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm not talking about the big wigs who are supporting us. I'm talking about the little guys who are out there, like... You know, Lord Jesus, I'm here with my family in the middle of nowhere,
yeah.
And I hope it goes okay. Please protect me. You know,
right?
That's what you're looking at now with the internet. It is a totally new existence. But anyway,
that's right. I agree with that, Abby. 100%. Avoid money, politics, religion among friends.
Oh, I don't know if I do or not.
Well, here's the thing. It's easier to do that. And I just because I think ahead in so many aspects of my life, like, it's just easier to not voice that opinion than it is to recover from a conversation with a close friend if it doesn't go well.
But on the same token, it gives you an opportunity to be more in love with them. It gives you an opportunity to come back and say, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Or for them to come back and say, I was wrong.
Yeah.
And when that happens, and it's rare, you can lose some friendships, you can completely fuck up some really good relationships.
True story.
But when that happens, and I just went through this with my step-nephew. Well, I mean, it's been a while. Like, you know, I went through a divorce back in May of 2018, and there was some confusion about some text messages, and, like, basically I was ready to go redneck. I was ready to choke the life out of this kid. And turns out, it wasn't quite what I was led to believe that he texts, you know. Man, I had to go back with my tail tucked between my legs at church and say, you know what? I'm sorry, dude.
It's easier to do that at church, isn't it?
Oh, no. No.
Really?
Fuck no.
How do you do church?
How do I do church?
Yeah.
Come out one day and see.
I'll take your word for it.
You punk ass bitch. Okay, shameless plug.
Seco's, hey, Buzz.
Seco's Vineyard. That's where I go to church. Liz, where'd you go? Anyway.
My buddy Buzz there always sending me some fantastic music on YouTube. I appreciate you, Buzz. Yeah, dude. So I feel like every time I would go to church, that would be the time when you're most open and you're most vulnerable and you're most susceptible to. Yeah,
I feel like that's normally not always, but normally the time that most people are most shut down.
Really?
Now we both grew up in the South.
So disheartening to me to think.
Oh, dude. I don't cuss, I don't gamble, I don't drink. I'm a good, upstanding citizen of the community. Come on, man. We both grew up in the South.
Yeah, but
it's like that joke. How many Baptists do you take fishing with you? Two. Because if you take one, he'll drink all your beer. But if you take two, they won't drink any. Come on. I mean, this is what I grew up with.
But that's so bad.
I know. And that's what, I fucking love my church.
That's so bad.
And, like, I hope my pastor listens to this. He's not going to blink an eye. Like, I've sat down and cried in front of him and looked at him and said, Tim, you know I'm a fucking asshole. And this is in some dark times in my life. Didn't bat an eye.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thankful for my church. I'm thankful for my pastor.
Yeah.
You know, but growing up the way we did, that's not the way you act in church.
Man, that's my biggest problem with church, is that churches give the illusion that if you can't be the person that you are all the time, then you're probably not welcome there. And most churches give off that vibe.
That's what I just said.
And that's not healthy for the religion, and that's why I don't go to churches, and I believe that churches will be eventually obsolete and are now, for the most part, just money pits that people can get free, that people can go tax-free, and most of these churches that you see are more like rock concerts and big production shows than that, and I wish that God would be the forefront now instead of the light show and the band and this guy that's being piped in from Houston or wherever.
Oh my God.
And I can't stand the thought of that because I am an actual Christian who has read the Bible and loves God.
Mm-hmm.
And that maddens me.
Well,
think.
Here's the deal. You read the Bible, you're kind of fucked up when it comes to religion from then on.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. So my fiance, Kelly, when we first started dating, I went to her church. And you said the whole some guy that's piped in from, and we're not going to call names of any churches.
Yeah.
Pretty much anybody who's local and knows exactly what I'm talking about. I went and I was like, okay, yeah, laser show and smoke machines. And, oh, man, the band's fucking amazing. And you get this, you know, pat little 3-point sermon that I've heard in every Baptist church. Nothing against the Baptist church. I grew up in the Baptist church. It's why I'm a believer today.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, how about next week you come to my church? You know, and she went with me. And after the service, like, she didn't say anything through the whole service. And, oh, Kelly's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She's just fucking amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So after the service, I was like, what'd you think? And she looks at me. She's like, holy shit. I didn't know church could be like this.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. And it's just because that particular day, like, the quote-unquote worship time, the music, it fucking sucked. Like, I don't like the rock band. It's taken me a long time. Like, I committed to my pastor years ago. I'm going to worship my heart. I'm going to try my best because this is the guy that you saw fit, or this is the group of people you saw fit to lead worship.
That's right, Liz. That's right,
yeah, Liz. We're on the same page on that. You know, I'm under your authority to... That's freaked some people out. Whatever. My pastor has this ability to worship no matter what, which freaks me out because I'm like, this just sucks. So, whatever. But he, and you kind of worry about the whole cult of personality. You know,
yes.
He's a local boy, redneck.
Yeah.
His dad was a contractor, built half of fucking Myrtle Beach, you know. But, dude, when he preaches, like, he's preaching to me.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody else there is just, and it's no different listening to him preach than it is me sitting down at Starbucks with him, like cussing like a sailor and crying in front of him, or him crying to me for that matter, you know. So that's why I say I love my church. So you can come sometime. Anyway,
yeah.
Moving on. All right, back to church. So when's the last time you've been to church, and how much did church influence your music?
Church is my music. That's why it so I first got interested in wanting to learn how to play guitar because the church that I was going to didn't have a band. And
what church was that?
That was Stephen's Pentecostal Holiness Church.
Pentecostal Holiness,
South Carolina. Now I hear you, Abby. I don't blame you there. Just because of what we've said, churches just aren't my thing. Sometimes God does that, Liz. That's how I react to the Spirit a lot, is crying. But just like.
And Abby, my pastor Tim steps on my toes sometimes, but he loves me.
Yeah, and before we move further, if you go to church and you leave feeling the same way that you felt when you got there, you ain't been to church. That's Pentecostal for you right there. That's shouting time right there. Don't do that. Don't you do that. That's blaspheming the Holy Spirit.
No, it's not.
Blaspheming the Holy Spirit.
Blaspheming the Holy Spirit is refusing Christ.
That's blaspheming the Holy Spirit.
No, it's not.
That's the Bible.
We'll argue about that. That's not the
Bible. That's the Bible, man.
We'll argue about it later. I love you. Go ahead.
Blaspheming the Holy Spirit. Somebody gets moved by the Holy Spirit and they speak in tongues, and to do that without being moved by the Holy Spirit and joking is blaspheming.
We'll argue about it later.
But
that ain't Bible. That's church. But go ahead.
So I was raised in Shiloh United Methodist Church in Bennettsville, South Carolina. My dad still goes there.
Initially, you were raised up in a Methodist church, and you ended up in a Pentecostal.
Okay, the school that I went to was Stevens Christian Academy, which was the school next to Stevens Pentecostal Holiness Church. So the preacher of Stevens Christian Academy, or of Stevens Pentecostal Holiness, was also the administrator and my best friend's dad and my dad's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's best friend was like the preacher of this Pentecostal Holiness Church. And it was like, yeah, 100%, Abby. Take your lunch with you. but we would go to chapel like 5 days a week, we would every morning for school, we would walk over to the church across the parking lot and do chapel, you know, for an hour.
They're prepping you for Bob Jones, buddy.
For an hour, you know, 5 days a week. And I remembered when I was like a kid for the first time in music school, and I was still going to public school in Bennettsville. And I just walked into music class one day after I'd learned a bum 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 bum. I remember the first day I learned that, I walked into music class and I sat down at the piano and I started doing that, and my whole class like started clapping, and like it was just one of the biggest moments of my life.
Yeah.
As like a musician, to where like the first time you get like that big applause after you play something.
Well,
where everybody goes like, "Hey, he really can play. He wasn't just lying. You know, he wasn't just joking. Kids lie." And it's like, and just, "Oh, he said he could play. I bet he can't." And then be like, "Wait, we get to the music room then." You know, and then like started playing that shit. But like that at an early age got me interested in music. And then when we started doing the whole like chapel thing, started going to the Christian school, one of my best friends had just started taking guitar lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
how old were you this time?
13.
Okay, gotcha.
And I was like, I'm kind of interested in guitar. Now when I was a kid, my granddad would tune my guitar to open tuning and give me a butter knife. Open tuning, and I could slide the butter knife on.
Is your
the,
granddad still alive?
No.
Oh,
no.
Fuck.
No. He passed.
I'd love to meet him.
Dude, no, you wouldn't have.
Yes, I would.
No, he was not a happy guy. He was not a happy dude. He was just everything. We got him a flagpole one year with the American flag out of his front yard so he could look out and see the American flag. That's something else we're going to have to weed it around. Next year, we get him a year subscription to the Florence Morning News so he can know what's going on.
Come every day. I'm going to have to go outside, pick it up.
That's something else they're going to have to pile up around here. We're going to have to throw away. That was him. He found fault in everything. Everything. Like, I mean, like, and people who know me, they know that I have a little bit of that in me.
No.
But this is not the same. Like, it was fault and everything. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rolling back.
Yeah. But anyway. So I got interested in music, and I was living with my dad at this time, like for a year or so that I lived with my dad and my stepmom and my sisters. And, I walked out on the porch one day, and my dad was sitting there playing the guitar, and he was dum-dum-ba-da-ba-dum-dum-ba-da. And I was like, "Hey, you can do that?" Because I mean, I always knew my granddad was a musician.
Right.
I was like, "Hey, you know how to do that? Man, what you know?" I was talking about it. And I was like, "Man, you want to teach me how to play the guitar?" And my dad, knowing what he knows, said, mm-hmm. "If you want to learn how to play guitar, you can go ask your grandpa how to play guitar." And like, I was my grandpa's boy.
Yeah.
Like I was
because of the music.
Well,
or just naturally.
I was the first grandbaby.
I gotcha.
First grandbaby, yep. And just I don't know, man. I'm like, my granddad, we were boys. Like, he would I would go to the auction with him on Friday nights at the car sale, man. Like, me and my granddad were boys, man. Yeah. Like, he was my dude. Like, we had chicken houses, and we would go to the chicken houses, and I would just sit in the car, or he would walk in there and open up the door and just look in, and I can smell that ammonia right now. Yep. As I'm saying this.
Yep.
And like, but like, he was the one that, like, he was a hard man. Uh-huh. He was just a hard dude.
I gotcha.
And he wouldn't help people do much. You know, he would show you how to do it and then make you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "If you want to learn how to play guitar and you're serious about it, I'll show you." He said, "But I'm only going to show you one time, and then you're going to have to figure it out." So he showed me, that's right, Abby. But he showed me three chords. And G, C, and D. and he said, "You learn how to play them chords. You learn how to play them chords, and then I'll teach you something else." You know, and he showed me those. I went and figured those things, and I play them literally like till my fingers were like Like, you know, and they're like bricks now. Yeah. But back then, you know, they're 13-year-old soft fingertips. You know what I mean? Like, that's just that to press that down on steel strings is not pleasant. And to learn how to play on acoustic guitar with like heavy strings and
a high action and you gotta
push hard. But I learned those chords, and by that time, the internet had just come out. Like, dial-up internet had just gotten accessible to everybody, you know. And I have such a good memory. Like, I have I'll brag about this all the time. I don't give a shit. I have almost a flawless verbatim memory.
I can believe that,
to the point to where I can think about a song and hear it.
Yeah,
like all parts. So that was the saving grace in me learning, like getting learning music quicker than most people, was because I could just remember exactly what a particular song sounded like. I could go on the internet, ultimateguitar.com, get the chords to that song.
Oh my God, I haven't thought about Ultimate Guitar in years. Dude, that's hilarious. Yeah.
UltimateGuitar.com. And it's still going on. A kid that was at a gig at Grumpy Monk I picked up at Broadway night before last actually said, "Dude, you need to upload your songs to UltimateGuitar.com." So apparently it's still going, man. Like,
really?
So people who are like, I'm so glad of that. That means that there's hope, because I learned through Ultimate Guitar, man. The internet and yourself are the best teachers you're ever going to have.
Yep.
Because you know how to break things down to where you can understand it.
And somewhere out there on the internet, there's someone who thinks like you do.
Absolutely.
It just takes some time, a little bit of effort.
Oh, yeah. I taught myself to swim, too, Abby. Your granddad
didn't throw you in the pond? Figure it out, boy.
No, but that's basically what he did. Oh, Liz, I'll remember stuff for you. But no, that just being able to remember how this song sounded, getting on Ultimate Guitar and learning the chords, and then basically once I see the chords and I hear it, you know, that I know what it's supposed to sound like, and if it doesn't sound like that, I know I'm doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So just my buddy who was taking guitar lessons had been playing drums for a really, really long time. And we kind of like started a little band, like I was, you know, just the first thing playing guitar, you know, I was like,
right.
Okay, well, you know, you're trying to do everything, you rush on everything to get everything done. You know, you don't want to sit and learn how to play guitar for a few years and then join a band. It's like, screw that. I want to learn how to join a band. And I was like, all right, well, screw that. I want to learn how to play lead guitar. Like, I want to learn how to play solos and stuff like that. So like, right after I learned my first couple of chords, I was, you know, going to music stores and hanging around with I would go to this music store in Laurinburg called Music Masters and just hang out there all day. Like, there was this guitar tech named Clay, who was a monster guitar player. And if Clay ever hears this, you're the reason that I am what I am now guitar wise. So
bless you, Clay. Thank God for Clay.
Clay sat me down and showed me the all the way down the fretboard. I know I didn't do that right, music people, but it doesn't matter. He showed me what I now think of as the box,
right?
The box that you play inside, and it's like. He showed me that thing, and then he said, and all you have to know is that. You can plug that into any key you're in. You just move it up and down the board from wherever you need. And he was like, just messing around with that for a while. So, like, in the first year or two of playing guitar, me and Chris Burks, my drummer, that started a band. It was just called Kelsey and Chris. And we played at church. And we did Lord, I'll Lift Your Name on High. And we did Your Love is Extravagant. And God, what's the one? I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. And all these old...
You're so young.
Yeah.
You're so young.
Yeah. And we did I Could Sing Your Love Forever. And just that was the songs that were hot right then. Yeah, you know, like Jesus Freak by DC Talk. And Third Day, and we would just cover all of these Christian bands. Thank you, Clay. Absolutely.
That's exactly right, Abby.
But like, yeah, we would just play all these hot Christian songs at the time, and then Chevelle came out, and I was like, this shit is great. And by this time, the band we had been together for, you know, a couple of years now. We had gone around a lot. I remember Chris's dad, before I got my license, Chris's dad would pack us all up. You got somewhere to go, man?
No, I'm keeping tabs for you. You got sunlight you got to worry about, remember?
Oh, no, I got that. Trust me.
We got a half that. Hour. Just make it.
I've already made plans. We got a whole hour if we need it. Absolutely.
Well, we might take it.
All right. So I started doing that. And by that time, like, we've been playing together a while, and we had youth group. That was the part that made me go to Stevens Church, was the youth group. Because we didn't have a youth group at Shiloh United Methodist Church. It was all old folks.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, all of my friends that went to school at Stevens, you know, I was not exactly a popular kid. So, like, I started wanting to do the youth group thing, and then all my friends just kind of, like, they wanted to do the youth group thing, too. And that's always been a thing, by the way. People have always liked to do the thing that I like to do. I don't know why that is, but that's always been a thing.
Oh, all right, I'm going to talk churchy here for a second. You got a gift of leadership.
Maybe. But
you do, though.
But still, that's neither here nor there. But they started we started to do a pretty big youth group, like youth group following or whatever, and we would play. I'd set up every single day. We'd get done at school on Wednesday. I would go out in the hallway of this long, it was a K through 12th grade in one long hallway of a school.
K through 12th?
Yep. One long hallway of a school, a classroom for each. There was only like one class.
Damn, a smaller nanner.
But there were seven people in my graduating class.
Wait a minute. I thought Bennettsville was bigger nanner.
Stevens Christian Academy.
Oh, I got you. Sorry. I'm with you. All right. I got you, bro. Go ahead.
But yeah, like there, I would go out into the hallway and I would set up at the end of the hallway. I'd set the drum set up, set the bass rig up and my amp and everything. And I would set the show up, and I got so good at that shit, I could set up an entire stage worth of shit in like 10 minutes. Drums and all. I'm not joking. Like it was down to a science, and I did this every Wednesday.
For those of you who don't know, and I'm not a musician, but I grew up with the two people in Aynor, and eventually the third person from Aynor, fourth and fifth, who went on to be musicians locally.
Thank you, Abby.
Brad Dalsey, Bradley Roberts, way back in the day. When did you come down here?
06.
Oh, yeah, that was way later. So back in the day... Brad was my best friend growing up. He might have been 17 or 18, and Bradley might have been 16 or 17. Both of them fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really good. Like, in the early 90s, they played with Anthony Zinconi, and Tom Kane was on drums and the singer, and they had this band. I think for a while it was Groove Digger, and then Bradley played with iGod for a while, and then eventually went to Squirrel. Like, I grew up around musicians. And I've been abused by every instrument there is. I don't have it in me. Like, I have it in me just enough to be able to say G, C, and D. Those are the first three chords you learn.
Yeah.
You know, so just from that.
It's honorable of you to admit that.
No, dude, absolutely. I can't play fucking. I took lessons from Tom Yoder for a year. I don't know if you know who Tom is or not.
If you're in the Myrtle Beach area and don't know who Tom Yoder is,
something's wrong.
Get out.
Exactly.
Get out.
You know, and I just. I do better at driving a tractor.
And for those of you out there that like guitar, you should YouTube Tom Yoder.
He is Y-O-D-E-R.
Monster.
Back in the day.
Adam Justice is a guitar teacher as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know
that.
Well, anyway, so Tom's up in North Carolina now, but that's neither here nor there, like Kelsey says, you know. But I know enough about music for him to say I could set that shit up in 10 minutes. He's talking about 45 minutes to an hour's worth of work.
Sort of. But I don't know. I have a method to everything that I do. And if you get a method down.
Systems, baby.
Systems, man. It's everything. If you get a method down of exactly how to do something, then you can easily recreate that consistently.
Yep.
And like that's why I always tell Adam and Smitty, I'm like, just let me do this. Just trust me. Just get out of my way. Like one of those things where I'm like, y'all don't know how many hours I have spent perfecting how to properly set up and tear down a stage. Mm-hmm. Like I did this like every Wednesday for I don't know how long, man. My entirety of my time at Stevens. Like I'll say that there is nothing that's off subject in our conversation, but yeah, on air there is one thing that I won't talk about that happened that I'll have to tell you about later, and you'll understand why I can't. But it's a really funny situation that also happened around the school that would be and the only reason I'm not talking about it because I am going to talk about it one day. It's just I have to wait until like. I have to wait until the right time.
To Kelsey, if you shed your dick to the Sunday school teacher, I don't know if we can be friends, man. anyway, all right, sorry. I am that lewd person. What is this shit emoji over here? Stephen School.
In a world full of shitty people.
Sweetheart, it definitely was not Catholic.
That's my tag. In a world full of shitty people, don't be one of those people. Be a good person.
I got you.
So in a world full of shitty people, I'm not one. I appreciate that, Abby. Thank you.
There you go. Pop-up band, master, middle school. I love that. Yep.
But that's what inevitably. I knew that was a really long explanation as to why I ended up going to a Pentecostal church out of Methodist church, but that's why.
So
that's
just that transition, like, all right, like the reason was the youth group and the music and everything. Did you buy into their theology, or was it just, nah, I'm here for the music and the youth
group? Oh, dude, no, I was in it. Like, I was, that was real. Like,
I believe you, because you called me out and told me that, like, mocking tongue.
No, that was real. This isn't an act. Like that's real. I'm a very spiritual person. I believe in the Bible. I believe that it is real. I believe that those things happen.
Yeah.
And you know, I believe that.
Yeah.
And I get so disappointed. The reason I don't go to church anymore is because I look at the people and I'm like, not to say you don't have this understood like I have this understood, but I stopped going to church because I look behind the scenes and I was part of one of those bands, you know. I was part of one of those for a long time. And just to see the behind the scenes of that and be like, oh, man, you know, I'm just not. You guys are up here. I basically left the band because I was like,
I'm human.
Yeah. I shouldn't be up here. I shouldn't be up here on behalf of God, because that's if you're on that stage in that church, you are representing God,
right?
To people, and that you're a representative. You're basically a representative to God, you know, or for God. You're there because. That you're a face for God,
but in but it's through the lens of the leadership of that church.
Yes,
and you know that lens might not be accurate.
Yeah, that's true. But just I felt like I needed to, and I told them this when I left the band. I was like, I've got some things going on in my life right now to where I just don't feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable representing God, you know, like I just don't feel like I don't think I'm doing this right, you know. And I had started smoking weed again, and because I had quit for a really long time. I quit drinking and smoking weed and everything for a really long time when I was going to church in North Myrtle Beach, and that was after I'd already been here.
Where'd you go to North Myrtle?
Ocean Drive.
Yeah, oh, that's a good church, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Ocean Drive.
Yeah.
Ocean Drive Presbyterian?
Yep.
My Reformed brother. All right.
But, yeah, I was there, and I played with the band for a while, and they're great. They're still mm-hmm. – Kelly Gabriel is mm-hmm. Is amazing. And Bobby Gabriel, both of them, Kelly and Bobby, are outstanding. Bobby is the band leader at the Alabama Theater, and me and Kelly was the band leader. She was the basically lead singer. And
did you ever play with a kid named Isaac? I'm drawing a blank on his last name right now. But he played Ocean Drive for a while around that time. No,
I when I was there, it was me, Greg Rolls from television.
Mm-hmm.
And me,
great hair, Greg Rolls.
Yeah, absolutely. me and Greg and Duster Stanton. Bobby was the drummer. Ty Warren, who went on to form a band with me and buddy Walt Anderson and Stephen Rinaldi, called the Dalton Floyd Band. It was a Christian band that we were in. We went and we had a couple of songs that did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some opening gigs for a pretty big band. I don't know if you ever heard of Waverly.
Yep.
We opened for Waverly at this pretty, pretty big church in Goldsboro, North Carolina. And did a couple of shows around and led a couple of praise and worships at Ocean Drive on Sunday mm-hmm. when the other band had a week off. And yeah, there was a lot of that was going on back then. Like that was and I was serious about it. Well, I did this Bible study with, I cannot remember. Karen Wilson. And she knows the Bible better than anybody I've ever known. She is the person who told me. She is the person who at a Bible study one time looked at Walt and pointing at me and said, "Did you hear what he just said?" She was like, "He just said that." And she was like, "He just said that he thought that he would go to hell if he died because he had made sins since he had, because he had sinned and hadn't asked forgiveness for those sins."
That ain't the way it works.
And she is the one that told me that when Jesus died for your sins, he didn't die for the sins you committed on up until the point where you realized who he was. He died for all of them.
Right.
She was like, "Your ticket has been bought and paid for already.
You're done.
You're in, man." Like, and she was the one that told me that, and I was like, wow, like just mind blown. Like, how in the world? I appreciate you stopping in, morning. I don't know how to say that, but I appreciate you nonetheless. But yeah, just she was the one that said that, and just being a part of that Bible study was pretty much pretty life changing for me. Like just to have somebody that awesome that was willing to teach me these things about this book that I revere. And after that point, I was working for the city of North Myrtle Beach at that time, doing beach services like chairs and umbrellas.
Okay.
And this was before I was a supervisor, so I was just sitting under a beach chair renting umbrellas and chairs mm-hmm. to tourists for
stealing money from people. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I took as much as I could.
How much is an umbrella? It is $25 an hour.
Sorry. Actually, it's $25 a day. just so you know, $25 a day.
Hey, you got to get it where you can.
Yeah, it was $25 anyway. A day or $150 for a week.
Moving on.
So yeah, I had 8+ hours a day by myself on the beach,
mm-hmm.
and I spent that time reading the Bible. Like, I started from Genesis. I started on page one. In the beginning, God created heavens and the earth, and it was shapeless and without form. And I ended up in the name of Jesus, amen, in Revelation. Mm-hmm. I read it from beginning to end. And I've got it hanging on my. I'll show it to you if you want to see it. It's hanging on my bed in my room. It's hanging on my bedpost. When I say hanging on, it's in a Bible case. Just so you know, just to help you paint that picture.
Because all good Christians got a Bible case. By the way,
yeah, <I'm> right.
I come with you,
yeah, right. Bro. Now listen, man. This like. I get so offended when people talk shit about the Bible just because that means that they don't understand it.
And they're like, they never read it.
They've never read it. And the Bible in itself calls itself out for how ridiculous it is.
Absolutely.
Over and over. It continuously does that. It's almost a parody.
Yeah.
Once you get to the middle of the Old Testament, it's almost a parody to where they're like, just like they used to say, blah, 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 blah.
And if you think, the shit that we're saying right now, like God has a problem with it or God doesn't have a sense of humor, read about Balaam and his ass. If you can't read that and see the humor in that and picture God, well, I don't know about picturing God. I mean, I can't picture God. But if you can't picture God just laughing his fucking ass off at this guy because his donkey's talking to him, I don't know what to do for you. You know?
But also, too, the Bible does over and over again almost discount itself and say, you know, that there is folly in man and only God
Absolutely.
Is perfect.
Yep.
And that's what I mean is that a man did write the Bible, and they say, yeah, but he did it, you know, through God's guidance. And yes, he did, but there's a reason all of those books are collected together, and it's because they are supposed to be read together.
Yep.
And if you read them together, it gives you the key to everything. It tells you how to understand it. It tells you how to read it. It teaches you how to read it as you go along. And I did that over the course of a summer. And in one summer, I sat and I started in Genesis and I read all the way through. And I got it out. I had a Bible talk recently on a live that I did. And I brought the Bible out that I was talking about. I went in my room and got it and showed it to the camera and everything. Like, it's in pieces. Like, I mean, it's like it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it so much, I bought the exact same Bible in hardback.
Nice.
And that's my actual Bible, the Bible that I take with me
when I go places. For years, I always bought, and I can't find them anymore, but in the late 90s, early 2000s, Zondervan made this paperback NIV, and it was cheap as shit, like $18.
The green one?
This one was blue. It was navy blue and had like a marbled cover. But that's all I bought. And that would be my Bible. You know, I'd go to church and open it up and I'd circle, you know, because a good Christian, underline shit and highlight shit. You know, and if I ever heard anybody say, well, I don't have a Bible, like, I'd give them mine.
Yeah.
And I went through, I don't know, maybe a dozen, you know.
That's good of you to do that.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I loved it. And Zondervan, if anybody who works with Zondervan's out there listening, publish those Bibles again, because that was the best thing you motherfuckers ever did, was that little $18 Bible.
Because we say motherfuckers a lot, I doubt there's a Zondervan representative.
Oh, dude, Zondervan, they also publish the Satanic Bible. They're not a Christian organization. They're probably listening. But yeah, that Bible, that paperback, less than $20 Bible, was the best thing you guys ever did. But yeah, I love that Bible. It was the NIV Life Application, which, that's some serious shit. I mean, like, the notes in that motherfucker were,
yeah,
it was great. But anyway, now, like, my Bible now is a nice leather-bound NASB, because NIV.
American Standard's nice. I like the New Century Version or the English Standard Version, but the English Standard Version is the most accurately
word for word,
accurate to the original Hebrew and Aramaic.
Yeah.
And
it is a great translation. I love it. NASB is just my favorite because I love the Reformed tradition. I love Presbyterian Church.
Yeah.
Even though I go to a vineyard, and they have one foot firmly planted in the Presbyterianism, they have one foot firmly planted in your charismatic movement. You know?
Yeah. That was sort of where we were at Ocean Drive. The 9:15 service.
Yeah.
We had like a 6:15 service, a 9:15 service, and an 11 service.
Yeah.
And the 11 o'clock service was, or the 9:15 service rather, was like our contemporary. And then they had they did three services a day. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I thought they had two.
No, they did three. They did a traditional at 6:30, I think.
In the morning or in the evening?
Yeah. Okay. I'm pretty sure they did like a traditional service at like 6:30.
Because all your gray hairs are up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right. And then they did like a contemporary service at 9:15. And then after that they did like a middle of the road service at like 11, I think, with
right.
like the yeah, because I don't even think the traditional service did anything except the organ.
Nice. All right. So we talked about church for a while. We talked about your upbringing, your music. One thing I wanted to talk about before we ran out of time, and it relates to both of us because, like I said in the very beginning, I'm an emergency room nurse. I'm in the healthcare profession. I want to talk about anxiety attacks.
Okay.
I want to talk about mental illness.
Yep.
I've heard you say that you suffer from anxiety attacks.
Yep, I do.
How often?
If I not very often. I would say maybe a really bad one maybe once every couple of months.
That's pretty often. I mean, if you think about something that paralyzes you as a human, it's pretty fucking often.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Yeah, it does. I don't know. I'll get anxious feelings every day. Like, I'll get anxious feelings every day where I'm just like, it'll be in a situation like I'll be in the middle of a show and I'll just have that thought, man, I would just really rather be home right now. And just immediately I'm very good at living inside my thoughts. Like my memory, like I said, my memories are great. So, I mean, like my memory palace is vast, and just being able to live there is awesome for me. So for that second, I am home. And then when I like come to out of that little thought that I have after going that instant of going into that mind palace and like realizing, okay, I'm not home. It's like, oh, I was preparing myself mentally for somewhere that I'm not. And that makes me uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable to know that I'm not where I would rather be.
Do you experience that when you're up on stage?
Sometimes.
While you're playing, or just like the setting up, or in between songs? I mean, I'm just curious. Like,
no, it could be in the middle of a song.
Really,
in the middle of a song, just like me think about that. Think about something, or I'll see something, and that's another reason why I play with my eyes closed a lot.
Because that blows my mind.
Yeah,
that it could happen in the middle of a song.
Yeah. Well, dude, people are like, you think that I'm thinking about the song that I'm playing when I'm playing the song?
Yeah, you've told me that. Yeah.
Because I'm not.
Speak that out.
It's easier for me to not think about what I'm playing because I don't need to.
But how does that emotion, because you are an emotive artist.
Yeah.
How does that emotion come across if, like, in your mind, you're having this little moment of anxiety? Not anxiety attack.
Yeah.
But this little moment of, fuck, I just wish I was home. How do you do that?
Because I know that's what I'm meant to do.
I don't mean to take it back to church, but
yeah.
Today the sermon, this little girl led the... shout out to Lauren. You did a great job. She preached today because my pastor, Tim, my head pastor, whatever, was out of town. Yeah, she preached. And she talked about, at one point, knowing, shit, there was three things. Where you came from, where you're going, and why you're here.
Yeah.
So that point of why I'm here.
Right.
You know, that's huge. That's a big deal. It's cool to hear you say that. Like, I was created for this.
Yeah.
And you are. Absolutely.
I'm lucky as shit to have found the thing that I'm supposed to do.
Fortunate. I don't believe in luck, but we can argue about that later. But
fortune and luck are probably tied together in the Webster's dictionary.
All right, moving on. but yeah, like you realize that, like I was created for this. Yeah. You're blessed in that respect. There are very few motherfuckers on the face of the planet who know what they were created to do.
Yeah,
and the fact that you and
it found me.
Either way. You know what you're created to do. And the byproduct, the fact that it brings joy to so many people.
Yes.
You know, I'm a hard ass. I'm a redneck, don't give a shit, callous hearted motherfucker.
So how you really feel, man?
The fact that I seek you out, that I want to hear.
I really appreciate that.
Oh,
man.
Dude. I mean, it's life changing. Like, I've never, I mean, people, you know, I have, like, again, my step-nephew's a musician, and he is fucking unbelievable. He's an amazing musician. Steve Bailey, literally one of the greatest bass players to ever exist, was one of his professors, and, like, he could do shit that Steve was like, damn, you know, I can't believe you did it. And he's argued with me before, like, you can't live without art, and I'm like, I probably can. but what that brought around to me, what that brought around to me was two things. One, I can. It is a miserable existence. That was one side of it. And the other was, art is everywhere. What I do, because I'm good at my job, it's art. It is simply an alternative way of thinking about accomplishing tasks. And when it comes to music or physical art, like you were talking about earlier, you know, Smitty, bringing about an emotion, bringing about a feeling or a desire, like that's art. And when I walk into a patient's room and I change their state of being, that's art. Everything else is just technical. It's just work. It's no different than me wiring a building. I was an electrician for years. It's no different than me wiring a building. You know, the art comes in connecting emotion with a physical activity. And like, that's one of the things I appreciated most about you. Because, I mean, I have friends who are musicians. And I go out and I listen to them and I support them. But I don't feel a connection. Like, I don't feel any emotive force behind it. It doesn't connect me with anything. It doesn't change my state. So, to me, like, that's art. And that's what you guys do.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say whenever I wanted you to finish your thought. But I was like, what is art?
Yeah.
How does one define art and what art is? What is simple for somebody else is art for somebody else. What, like, art can be the same thing, can be art to one person and a bar stool to somebody else.
Absolutely.
Like, it's art. You're right. Art is everywhere. Art, everything is art. Anything that is, and now that's why. Going back to your original point about Instagram and people using, like, just pictures of their body and things like this to monetize and to make money is because we are, for the first time in our nation's history, in our world's history, artists are actually monetarily respected more so now than any other time in the history of the world.
And Van Gogh died broke.
Yes. Yeah. And now there are a lot of artists who feel like that's the way it should be done. You know, if I want to be the real thing, then I'm going to have to do this just like the real things did. I have to die broke. I have to go be homeless like Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to go, I have to
or
I have to do these things that all of these past generations of this have done so that I can also be counted as legit. But if you think about it, each person who we can put on that list that we think about when we think about who defines like art, like actual paintings or guitar or drums or any sort of art or any music or anything like that, what they did was drastically different than everything that the people before them did in one small way. They followed all of the rules except for one specific little thing that they did differently. And I'm like, I want to do that with my music and my podcast and my name and my thoughts. And just I want to do all of that with all of those things. And I'm going to use social media to do so. And I'm using the social media as a way to, you don't just, like if Van Gogh had the internet, you know, like if Van Gogh had a website like Smitty's got, if he had a Van Gogh.art page, dude, like, I'm just saying, like, imagine the possibilities, and we are there.
Yeah, exactly.
We are there. But people are too, and this might come across as people may perceive me as being conceited or cocky about this, but people are too caught up in how things used to be to realize maybe they are as good as this person was. Maybe you are as good as Van Gogh. Maybe you are as good as Jimi Hendrix or whoever, or whatever, whoever you want to think. Maybe you are that good. Maybe the only difference in them and you is that they wanted it more. Maybe they just wanted it more, because there is no reason and no excuse for anybody to be under a rock these days with as many of ways to get out into the world.
Absolutely.
As there are now. There's no reason why there should be anybody out there with a talent that is hidden, with art that can make the world better. Because I don't care what your art is, there's somebody in the world that needs it. And it's not yours. That's the thing that people like get. It's not yours. Like, this is, I look at it like God, like a deity. I look at it like something that controls me, something that I will be a part of when I'm not here anymore. And that's what's driving these cogs. That's what's turning these wheels. I'm just so happen to be the person who grabs it out of the abyss and shows it to you for a little while. And everybody else is doing that in their own ways too. And that, just to keep that hid, is not fair to you or the world who needs it. I don't know who needed to hear that, but I wasn't speaking right there.
But a ton of people did. I'm one of them. I mean, the only reason I'm here right now is because Kelsey was gracious enough to invite me. I've wanted to do this forever. I'm too chicken shit to go through the work to actually do a podcast.
Why?
Because I'm scared, just like everybody else. Just like everybody else listening to this who doesn't actually have a pod. Everybody has something to say.
Everybody should have a podcast.
Everybody, I agree with you. And I felt that more now that, so Kelsey turned me on to Joe Rogan. I listened to Joe Rogan years ago, and I'm like, oh, this is frat boy profanity bullshit. Kelsey and my nephew, they were like, you might want to listen again. It completely changed since years ago when I first listened to it. I'm like, damn. Dude, this guy, I don't know how he does it. I have no idea how he has that many hours in the day that he is so up to date on all this shit that I don't care about, that he can have these conversations with anybody.
Yeah.
Alex Jones was the last one, and God bless Alex Jones. That pedantic, spasmodic, all over the place freak. And God bless Joe Rogan for sitting there and trying to reel him back.
Yeah.
But for the stuff that's important, you know, like, and Joe Rogan's the same way. It's like everybody has a voice. Everybody has something that's worth hearing. Now, it's up to you to sort it out, because most people are full of shit. And what you want to complain about or what you want to talk about is completely worthless. But if you look into your heart and what really matters to you and what makes you a human being and what you share with the people you love, that is worth broadcasting to the world.
Right.
But all of us, most of all of us,
all
before,
of us,
before you started this, all of us feel unworthy.
Yep.
You feel like nobody wants to hear this shit. You know, nobody cares. And, I mean, that's why we're willing to pay a psychologist $150 an hour to $300 an hour just to let us sit there and talk. That's all they're doing. You know, you're paying somebody that just to be heard. Everybody wants to be heard. You know, and that's why, that's really what motivated me a year ago when I sat down in Carrabba's and talked with you. It was like, dude, you're heard through your music. You're kind of heard through your podcast, but not really. Because you're talking to other people. You're interviewing them.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has this innate desire to be loved. And so many of us suffer through relationships that suck and people that change on us and divorce and separation and broken relationships and broken families that you believe in your heart, I don't deserve to be heard. What I deserve is to wake up in the morning and clock in and go to a job that doesn't mean anything to me, so I make enough money to pay the bills and have my iPhone and have Netflix and da-da-da-da-da. And that's not the case. We live in a time where you have the opportunity to be heard.
Right.
And you're going to face a lot of shit. You're going to get a whole lot more haters than you are. Like, Kelsey, I don't know about your comments. I'm sure you got a lot of people that are
not
like...
Not one.
You, ooh, damn, brother.
Not one.
Well, most people...
Delivery is everything.
Absolutely. I agree with you. No, I agree. Now, granted,
I think I have one thumbs down on my entire channel.
Holy shit. We'll get back to that. But you have to be prepared. You have to be prepared for people to hate you. People that don't even know you. Just because you're taking a risk and you're going out there and you're being vulnerable and you're facing your fears.
Yeah.
Like every time you get up on stage, everybody in the audience could be like, you fucking suck.
They won't.
That's what I love right there. That's what I love. Because, you know, it's not even about I'm a great musician. And you are. You.
I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
I mean, you guys, I'm always like smacking Kelly. Sometimes she'll get like, don't hit me. But I'll smack her. I'm like, watch this, watch this, watch this. It's like, oh my fucking God. Did you? And just for those of you who don't know, like, this boy,
I don't like being talked about. I don't like being bragged on.
This boy covers a Queen song that I absolutely fucking love. What is it? Go ahead.
Under Pressure.
Yeah. Nobody covers that song, much less alone. And I've heard Kelsey cover it alone, you know. I don't know if I enjoy the Cornbread version more or your version more. But regardless, you know, it is a matter of I know who I am. And if people don't like it, fuck them.
Yes.
Not in a hateful sense. Not that you want bad things to them. It's just that this is who I am, and I'm sharing it. I am being vulnerable, and I am sharing it with everybody in front of me right now.
If you can't help me go further in my journey, then you don't matter.
Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
And by saying, like, I'm not saying that I would need to use somebody to further me in my own journey, but like if I am not gaining spiritual nourishment or some kind of something good from you at all, then I'm not interested in carrying on this relationship.
Yeah, you know? you don't need a relationship like that.
Smitty said that I've got this thing to where I don't remember things unless I feel like it's going to benefit me in 10 years.
Ooh.
He said, I've got this thing that I won't like. If I know that this thing that I need, and this, it goes deeper than that, than what he originally said. But, no, we'll do it one day, Abby. We'll do it one day. Like, it goes deeper than just, like, I won't remember somebody unless, like, I was talking about names, like, people's names. Like, I'm just bad with people's names. He's like, you don't remember somebody's name if you don't think you're going to need to know it in 10 years. And I was like, yeah, I guess that might be true. But that might be true for a lot of different things. Like for me, like, I won't foster a relationship that I don't think is going to be important in 10 years. Like, there are certain people who I can never talk to again that are still going to be like, when I see them, it'll be like, you know, it'll be like we never, you
first
know,
first time you ever met.
No. It'll be like nothing. We never stopped hanging. It'll be like, you know, the relationship just picks up where it left off,
right? Without,
like the roommates that I've had over the years, or anybody who I've ever spent that much time with, will always have that. You know, whenever we see each other, it'll not be like, hey, man, where you been? Well, it'll just be like, dude, did you see that shit the other day? And it's like, yeah, man, I did too. So, like, but I mean, that's just how I am. And I think my friends know that. And if they don't, then here's that I've said it on the podcast enough to where I have, you know, that's just how I am. But wait, where was I going with that?
We were talking about relationships.
Yeah.
And what matters.
So, like, yeah, right. So, but the same with relationships. Like, if I don't think that a relationship, if I don't think that I'm going to need to, like, if I'm not going to need to have this person in my lives over the next 10 years, like, I'm pretty good at calling when that is, you know, and I can like walk away from something that I know is not going to be very important for me in the long run.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very, and the only thing that doesn't work with is money for some reason, by the way. That's the only thing that it doesn't work with is money. But for everything else, I am like so intricate in how I plan things and how I think of things. Like, before, and not to toot my own horn on this, but when somebody, an average person, is presented a situation, I believe that when I am present, now I'm gonna feel as narcissistic as possible. But yeah, when I'm thinking of or presented a normal situation in the same amount of time to process said situation, I would be willing to bet that I have thought 4 to 5 steps further than any other rational person would, only because I get let down so easily. I'm very easily let down if I get my hopes up for something. So it's easier for me to, when presented with a situation or a thought, to where I will take that thought and I will run it through as many filters as possible in my mind to properly assess what could potentially happen, so that I'm... And I always shoot as low as possible on that scale. Whenever I figure out exactly what it is that is most likely to happen, that's the thing that I usually prepare for. But in my mind, in that same instant, I have already plugged in I don't know how many other different situations and different ways that this could potentially turn out and ways to avoid that, which is a trick that, ironically enough, I learned from hearing old Billy Martin Yankees manager stories, where Billy Martin, who was like one of the old Yankee managers back in the day in the early Steinbrenner days, would figure out that he would come up with all of these things that he came up with one of these things where he knew that this opposing coach was like doing this thing that was going to screw him over, and he knew that that's what this coach was doing, and he got it in his mind. He was so paranoid about this, and that's how they're going to beat me, that's how they're going to get me, that's how they're going to make me look stupid, to where he realized that he was just paranoid, but these tricks that he thought the other coaches were going to do on him were in fact genius. And he started using them on everybody else, and that's how they started winning. So I do that in my thought process. Like, I think, oh my God, this is what's going to happen. This is what this person wants to talk. Like, if I get a message like, hey man, we need to talk, I'm like, oh shit, this is what this person needs to talk about. And then I do, and then immediately I'm like, prepare myself for the absolute worst thing that's going to happen. And it really helps a lot when you get to that point of thought to where you know that nothing matters.
Mm.
How this thing turns out doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. You're still going to be the same in the end. You're going to reach the same destination. These little things that are happening in your life that seem so big right now are just not going to matter one day. They're just, you're going to think about them and you're going to laugh and you're going to freak out that you were so worried about them. And for those things, it's just, and I'll hold on. I lost my train of thought. I was trying to read the cast or the chat over here. Losing my train of thought. But yeah, there's just, what did I just say? There's certain things that,
everything that seems important right now.
Yeah, it's not going to. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not going to matter. Like, all of this stuff isn't going to matter. Like, all of these little dumb things that we get worked up over, they don't matter in the end. So once you get that part figured out, it's easy to settle with the worst case scenario and walk into a situation expecting the worst case scenario, because then you're punching up. And that's the only way that karma will be kind to you, is when, if you only punch up.
Oh, karma.
I call it karma, call it God, call it the universe, call it what all you right, want.
Fair enough, yeah. No, absolutely. Now, that I can go with. It's a matter of just introspect and retrospect.
Yeah.
And what you said rings so true with me. Like, last October.
I appreciate you plugging that, Abby. Thank you so much.
And they are amazing, by the way. one of the few artists locally that put out any music that when you listen to it, you're like, shit, that's a good song. As opposed to, I'm going to listen to this because they're my friend. No. It's good music.
And now there are other bands that are local that you guys do need to listen to. I suggest you go download Sweet Sweet, anything you can find by Sweet Sweet, Oracle Blue as well. Oracle there's just Blue. There's just some Lizzie. Outstanding bands that are in this area that are releasing some really good original music. And I know there's a bunch more. Brian Rossler, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Rossler that was on the podcast the other day. Go back and find Brian Rossler's episode and download his music. A lot of great artists in this area if you know where to look. Original music.
We really are very underrated. I mean, you know, I latched onto these guys just because they were the first really good musicians that I've heard locally since back in the day when Bradley and Brad were playing with, you know, Patrick O'Leary and Anthony Zincon. They're fucking amazing. I mean, Patrick O'Leary used to play with Sawgrass. I don't know if they're still around, but he's ridiculous. He is a ridiculous bass player.
Sawgrass is our resident Grateful Dead bluegrass band around here.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you know Patrick, he's not a deadhead. The first songs he learned were straight up Black Sabbath, and he is ridiculous. Anthony Zanconi, I don't know if he plays much outside of church anymore, but for
years, a lot of folks do that.
But for years, he was one of the judges at the Best of the Beach when it came to guitarists.
Yeah.
They had this competition because they just got tired of giving him the win. And they're like, just be a judge. Anyway, so back to what we were talking about, though.
I know what you mean.
A few subjects of what we were talking about.
Within this podcast ago. Yeah,
all of this started off on the conversation about mental illness and anxiety attacks. And we didn't chase it down.
Totally forgot
now,
about that.
Now, I'm going to share, from my perspective, a very biased and narrow-minded view. And I want you to understand that South Carolina has literally the poorest mental health care. And that could be anywhere from a schizophrenic patient who needs long-term care to your college student who smoked too much weed and is freaking out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to share with you an emergency room nurse's perspective of it. And it's this.
Okay.
It's this. Motherfucker. Why are you taking up one of my beds? Suck it up. Go home.
That's actually...
Do not bother me. I'm going to give you some fluids. You're going to chill out. This is going to pass. You're not dying. But from the perspective of someone who is experiencing it...
Yeah.
Go.
I understand that I don't think like normal people think. So I'm very good at recognizing when I'm having a panic attack most of the time. Sometimes it takes somebody saying, hey, you're having a panic attack.
Really?
Sometimes Adam Justice saw me having one time when I was just freaking out, and it happened so quick I didn't have time to react to...
Okay.
The thought of having it. But anytime, like, I mean, I'm a big guy, dude. I have weird feeling like things all the time that'll come up. And like sometimes I just maybe need to burp. I've just got gas building up. Sometimes I also get terrible heartburn. I got a heartburn pill sitting right there that I have to take every single day. And if I forget to take it one day, like, I'll get heartburn from a glass of water just because I'm fat and I need to run and I need to exercise, and which will cure my anxiety inevitably. But I know it will. I just it's a matter of me actually, you know, not being lazy and enjoying AC long enough to actually go do something about it. But
you really believe that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we may circle back around to that, but go ahead. From your perspective, experiencing it, as opposed to my perspective.
From my perspective, experiencing it, but I wouldn't ever go to a hospital.
You've never gone to any? Really?
Hell no.
Well, mad respect for you for that, because I see it. I mean, every single night that
thing.
I work.
Here's my thing. If I'm going to die, do I really want to pay that extra little bit of dollar? Don't want to leave that money. I think that far ahead.
But I'm like, do I
want to leave that bill for somebody that comes after me?
But in the moment, it does feel like you're going to die.
No, well, it'll feel like you're having a heart attack. It'll just feel like you're. What happens is you're your heart rate gets up because you start to overreact to something. And then when you think, when you realize you're overreacting to something, your brain sends your body into this like fight or flight mode.
Sympathetic nervous system.
And, yep. And like then your heart just continues to beat, and then you start to concentrate on it. And here's the thing. You can hear your heartbeat right now. You just ignore it all the time.
Yep.
But I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm a musician. I can hear whatever the fuck I want. I can turn it off. I can listen to a 1,000-piece orchestra and listen to one instrument and hear only one instrument. And I can do that. Everybody else, that whenever you start having a panic attack, you're concentrating on your heartbeat. Concentrate on anything else. Whenever that's the trick. That's how I get myself out of most of them. I say I only have them like bad once a month. I'll have like certain little triggers all the time, but I'll just be like, and then just concentrate on something else. Concentrate on anything else. But as far as like, I don't really feel like I'm dying, or I don't feel like, I mean, you feel like you might be having a heart attack. And exactly, same for your nose. You can see it all the time, but you choose to ignore it. Yeah, you can see it all the time. After years of looking at it, you learn to ignore it. And yeah, like you can hear your heartbeat all the time. And that's the thing I think that freaks people out the most, is hearing the heartbeat. But I would never go to the hospital for that, but the same reason that you think that there are people who actually would need that bed that they are on. Some people would actually need, and they're just in there like freaking out over something that's not important.
Well, I'm glad that you say that in one respect. In another, I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, we both grew up in small towns.
Yeah.
At our heart, we're both rednecks, and redneck is not a dirty word. It's just a different way of living.
We're just Southern people, man.
Yeah. We're Southern people, and it's just like, you know, shit, life isn't perfect all the time, but you move on. So in that respect, like, I appreciate it. But in the other, there needs to be a certain sense of understanding and appreciation for, I suffer from mental illness. A lot of people do, because we're not created to live in the world we live in right now.
No,
not at all. You know, we are about, conservatively, 500 years more evolved than we should be. We don't know how to deal with what's going on in our lives anymore. And that creates all kinds of anxiety. I mean, I want you to think about the fact for a second that 95% of all narcotic pain medicine that's prescribed is prescribed in the United States of America. It's astounding. We believe that we are not supposed to experience discomfort. And up until recently, it was accepted that the majority of our life was experienced in discomfort.
Right.
It's cold in the fucking winter. It's hot in the summer. And we don't know how to deal with that anymore. I was trying to find here, what you hit on it as far as anxiety attacks go. I was trying to find, there's like this algorithm for dealing with anxiety attacks, and I'm coming up blank here because we don't have a Jamie looking shit up for us. But it's basically find something familiar. Shit.
Yeah. Well,
there's like five things.
Throw an anchor.
Hit on it.
Throw an anchor.
Exactly. Man,
no, like, you've got to do that. You have to do that. You have to find a way to ground yourself. You have to find like a constant.
Yeah.
You have to find a constant or ground yourself.
Now, do you?
And yeah, you're absolutely right. The death question is like, that's the thing. Like, people are like, your brain fires off those thoughts, like you feel like you are gonna die, and sometimes it does feel like that. It just feels like, oh shit, so this is it. This is how I go. But then I've come to you know what? It makes it a lot easier is after I stopped doing like drugs, like real drugs, like coke. Once I stopped doing that and I'm like laying in bed and I'm like, my heart rate gets up and I'm like, well, at least it wasn't McDonald's and not blow.
I swear to God, that's my thought.
McDonald's is a bigger threat, by the way.
You know what, man? They'll be like, man, at least it'll be like where my dad can actually talk about what happened at my funeral. He's like, man, that boy loved cheeseburgers, man. Like, he won't be like, yeah, well, he just them drugs got him. At least it won't be that, which is like my whole thing. Is like, you know what? I've done all right. You know, I'll be fine. You know, if anything does happen to me, worst case scenario, I have 155 episodes of Who I Am that the world will pay more attention to because I'm gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, once you get to that point, I think everything else gets a little easier too.
Yeah. You know, there's this saying, the best thing an artist can do is die.
Oh, that's, you know what, for their art, I mean, because there's not a lot of people who were as into Prince or Tom Petty,
yep,
or David Bowie or anybody who has passed on. Like, I'm going to say it. Sublime would not be what Sublime is had Bradley not passed away.
Yeah.
And a lot of people want to say the same thing for Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, which is not true because they were different. They would have been huge no matter, yeah, what happened to him. Of course, they were skyrocketed a shitload because of it, but they still would have been popular. But for the same thing, like, there's a lot of artists who, a lot of people who died early in their careers who might have gone on to defile their careers. And I said this about Janis Joplin the other night, man, with her alcoholism, mm-hmm, and her lifestyle. Like, yeah, if she wouldn't have passed on, she might have, you know, just defiled her career, yep, by, you know, just her lifestyle.
Been a has-been.
Could have been. Mm-hmm. And that's just sad to think of stuff like that. I mean, one of the other reasons why I'm stoked that, like, I don't, you know, live that life anymore, and like, I don't want to die tomorrow, but if I do, I'm cool. Like, you know, I'm like, I'm fine with that. Just so you guys know, if anything happens to me at any random time for any random reason, like, I'm good. Like, I mean, like, I'm fine with it. You know, I'm and you should be too, because who writes the rules to this game?
You just open up a whole new door there, and I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah, I got. Let's see if I've got a message.
It's 6:30.
I haven't gotten.
You got sunlight to deal with.
Yeah, let me just.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead. By all means, I don't want
to. While you're doing that, I'm going to ask you like a shitty Tim Ferriss question. Like,
okay.
What modern artists would you sacrifice, three of them, to get Prince back?
Oh.
Because, God, I miss Prince.
I wouldn't.
This is just hypothetical. It's okay.
I would feel bad. You can throw
Justin Bieber out there. It's okay.
How about I throw... I want to keep Justin Bieber, man.
What? Okay. It'll justify that and then go and answer the question.
Dude, Justin Bieber did himself.
He's a phenomenal musician.
As a child.
Yeah. Good point.
For the reason that Shia LaBeouf... For the same reason we have to keep Shia LaBeouf. You feel any certain way about him, but do you know his story?
Nuh-uh.
Dude, did you know that Shia LaBeouf called and acted as his own agent and got himself roles in movies when he was a kid?
Get out.
No, that's real.
And honestly,
anybody who makes their own way like that, like, I love that. I love Lady Gaga. Yeah. I think she's the shit. I think she's the greatest.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But to answer your question, I would trade three of those country guys with the same first name, with two first names, writing songs about sitting on a truck bed with a
click track.
With whatever. And I don't even mind the click track as much. I hate what it stands for, but for the reason I say I don't mind it is because it's only a musical thing. Because you know what? When David Bowie and Freddie Mercury do it, it's awesome.
Yep.
You know, so I don't want to discount the click because the click isn't bad. It's what they have done to it.
It's when it adds to instead of is the basis of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I would trade any of those guys. But can you count those as artists? Because I wouldn't want to trade a single artist for Prince just because music is going to be so much better now that he is gone in the future.
Because they're
creating more fans in the future. Like now that everybody blew up, you know, like all the Prince fandom that they didn't get already when it blew up, now you've got a generation full of people who are gonna grow up to Prince music. You know, that wouldn't have otherwise because you know, maybe people realize, oh shit, actually Prince was great now that I didn't realize he wrote all of this stuff and recorded all of this stuff.
Like,
creating fans.
Yeah, I told you earlier, like, I grew up around musicians out in, you know, Podunk, Ainer.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm most grateful for was the shit that I was exposed to because they were musicians.
Yeah.
Like, nobody else growing up in Ainer knew who Led Zeppelin was or, oh God, who did it? Mop the Hoople? Nobody knew who Mop the Hoople was.
All the young dudes.
Yeah, but just because these guys were students of Tom Yoder, I was exposed to all this stuff as a non-musician. You know, I tried. It's not in me. There is so much out there. There's so much out there, and that's one of the things I love about coming to hear you or Cornbread. You don't know. Because for a while, like, you guys kind of had the same set, and then all of a sudden, like, it just changes, and you're like, holy shit, this is amazing. I've yet to hear John Prine, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I haven't gone down that road far enough yet.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm surprised at that, man.
He's an artist I'm saving, if that makes any sense.
Not yet. Explain that.
When I go into an artist, I dive in heavily, and it will start to control me. It'll start to, like, control my writing. It'll change my writing style. It'll change my playing style. It's like uploading a new program into a computer that is just now part of me. That's how my brain works. Like, that's why I don't listen to music. Because once I do, then that defines me.
So you would be, if you were an actor, you would be a method actor. Like, you would be totally consumed by...
Well, I am.
So when you wrote that song for your dad...
Yeah.
Who was the influence during that? Like, I'm trying to think in my head, like, I remember the song.
That was him. That was just a... I had this idea because I really love Disney movies, and I love the thought of, like, princes and kings and things like that, you know, and stuff. So just thinking of my dad as the king, you know, and then, like, the story of the prodigal son, which that song is called The Prodigal Song. Yeah. And it's about, like, me being the prodigal son that just hasn't gone home yet, which is why in the chorus it says the fattened calf still living, but my kingdom all should know. You know, they haven't slaughtered a fattened calf yet because I haven't returned yet officially. But my kingdom all should know that when the trumpet sounds from glory, I'll be on the side with hope. So, I mean, I'm just saying that, like, I'm good, you know, like, I'm still who I was. And like... Just that's from his, that's from my viewpoint to, like, seeing him as a king, you know, because I think that that's the highest compliment that a dad can get, you know, is just being like, you know, I respect you so much to where, you know, anybody could be appointed father of this child. It could have been anybody, but, you know, a king is somebody you support and you are like, did you watch Game of Thrones at all?
I did not. No, I'm terrible.
It's like you are my like just being like you are my king, like you know.
I get the gist behind it though. The fact of what's the word I'm looking to? Fidelity.
Yeah.
I'm pledging my fidelity to you.
Yeah, you are my king. So I mean, like, this is why wouldn't, and I wanted to make it obvious that that's how I felt.
Yeah. I understand that. I mean, early on, you know, in our conversation, like I said, my dad and I, we did not get along at all.
Yeah.
But we're just alike. But when Tim Ferriss has this thing, you know, there's this whole series of questions at the end. One of them is, when you think of success, who do you think of? I think of my dad. When he died, he owed no one anything financially. He never made a ton of money. He was a tobacco farmer his whole life, pretty much, until he retired from farming, and then he had different jobs.
Yeah.
But I remember there's two.
Listen to that.
I hear it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Little John.
But there's a couple of things that I remember. You know, I grew up on a dirt road, and I remember walking behind him and trying to step in his footsteps. Like, he wore Brogans, you know. And he didn't look back, and he said, "I know what you're doing." And me being an 8 or 9 year old boy, I was like, "What? What am I doing?" He's like, "You're walking in my footsteps." And I was like, "Shit, you know, how do you know that?" He's like, "I was young once too." Like, that's always stuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty fucking cool.
Right.
You know, and there was another, and it goes back to, my dad was in World War II, and he talked about going over on the ship, and he said, "Richard, you know, I looked around, and I couldn't tell you who was going to come back, but I could look around and tell you who was going to die." Those two things always stuck with me through my entire life.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, he was just a redneck farmer.
Yeah.
He was a lot more intelligent than I ever gave him credit for when he was alive, you know.
Intelligence is measured in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. But he was an intelligent man, but he was like me. He was very childish and irresponsible and, you know.
Nothing wrong with that.
There kind of is. But
I'm childish and irresponsible. I don't want to think there's anything wrong with it because I'm that.
But yeah, those two statements, like when I think of my dad and being successful, like those two statements and the fact that he died owing no one anything, like that stands out to me, you know?
That's a pretty big deal, man.
Yeah. It's very rare today.
We can all hope to come close to that.
Absolutely.
Well, Brother Richard, I do have a couple of folks that are waiting on me outside here.
Yeah, you do.
Any final thoughts? Any last thing? I know that if you we'll do this again, except I want to reverse the roles and ask you about church and things like that, and have deeper conversation about that in the future. But we'll
acquiesce to that.
We'll get to that. Any final thoughts?
I just really appreciate you allowing me to do this. I want to encourage.
I appreciate you, man.
I want to encourage all the podcast listeners to come out and listen to the music. And, like, listen to the heart of Kelsey and the guys that he plays with. I've yet to hear American Sound. I look forward to hearing them. Also, I encourage you, when people find their true calling, I encourage you to support them and not be haters.
Yeah.
You know, like, Smitty, motherfucker, your art. I did not expect that out of you, brother. Like, that blows my mind.
It's fucking great.
It really is. So if you don't know, give me the J. Paul art, blah, blah.
JPaulSmith.art.
There you go.
Go there.
Look at his shit. It really is exceptional.
Yes, it is.
Support artists. Just support the people you know and what they're passionate about and what they're called to. And call that out of them and encourage them. And in return, you'll get that back in your life, and it's worth it.
Absolutely.
I promise you. So, have a good night. Be good to each other above all else.
Right. Yeah, do that indeed. Be good people. And since I gave it all to you in the beginning, I'm just going to go ahead and let that be it. In a world full of shitty people, don't be one of those people. Be a good person. Peace, bitches.